Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International. The Tarot trainers are experts in helping you and your business to achieve, lead, and outclass in every situation. Learn more at tero.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. With me is Jared Bernstein. Jared is a personal friend. We've known each other for a number of years. He is also the executive director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Des Moines. And while we don't do politics on the Business News Hour, we are going to talk about the business impact of what's going on in Israel with regard to the recent conflict over there that is now months old from the attack on October 7th. From the terrorist group Hamas and what that has meant to the economy in Israel. Jared is recently returned from Israel, and I think it was a three-day visit that you were on, and you were kind enough to share video testimony about every day that you were there. I thought that was wonderful. Jared, welcome to the Business News Hour.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
So, all right, let's dive into this. Let's talk, first of all, about the Federation and what it is that that organization does.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jewish Federation of Greater Des Moines is basically the representative of the Jewish community in central Iowa. We have about 3,000 Jews in the Des Moines
area. But who's counting?
But who's counting, right? And we focus on four key pillars. Education, we run a preschool, a Hebrew school, and summer camp. The Iowa Jewish Historical Society, which has a museum on our campus, which has a number of great artifacts and stories to tell. Jewish Family Services, which is a social services agency, mainly helping with seniors staying in place. And the Jewish Community Relations Council, which focuses on Israel advocacy, combating anti-Semitism, and other political issues of interest to our community.
And there's so much going on right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You think?
Absolutely. Everything from what's going on in Israel to trying to increase availability of Holocaust education in the state of Iowa.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think the legislature has just approved a bill. Is that correct?
Well, it got through the House and then died on the vine.
Ah, okay.
Yes, unfortunately.
But this is about Holocaust education in the classroom.
In middle school and high schools. So hopefully in the next session we'll make another go at it. It's something that's required already in about half of the states.
One of the things that, and to dovetail back into that,
yeah,
I remember when the Federation years ago, some 30, 40 years ago, as a matter of fact, I'm that old, had a traveling show, and they would visit communities and do a Holocaust education effort at the various communities across Iowa. And there was a big thing that happened each year where we would invite educators to one of the local synagogues for a conversation.
Yeah, we'd get about 100 educators coming to that each year. And that tailed off. It was a huge undertaking from volunteers, and that changed. However, if we are able to mandate Holocaust education in Iowa, there are going to be many more teachers who are in need of that education. That's something that we are ready to provide with all kinds of important resources linking that part of history back to Iowa in conjunction with some of the leaders in the field.
Right. It's very important because as we get further and further away from those events, memories seem to dissipate.
Memories dissipate, but the impact of that kind of education in the classroom goes far beyond knowing what the historical events of that time were. Yes, that's important, but it's also important to take all kinds of lessons from that.
Correct. Even in our time today.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about it. You were recently in Israel on a three-day junket, I think, examining places that have a sister relationship with the Greater Des Moines Federation. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so for 25 years, Des Moines and 17 other American communities have a partnership with the Western Galilee in Israel. This is a partnership that I would call a sister city plus. It's everything from business relationships, cultural, and really person-to-person at its heart. So it's important in Israel's time of greatest need that we show up there in person. We don't run away from our friends when they're in need. And right now, the story of what's going on in that part of Israel, the northwest corner, the border of Lebanon, is not so well known. They're facing rocket fire every day from Hezbollah. And Israel is responding, but there's a fear there that it's going to turn into an all-out war.
And this part of Israel in the north is one of the most beautiful parts of Israel.
It's the agricultural heartland.
It is. Yeah. It really is. And the economic impact of what's going on today in Israel is having a big... Well, there's a big problem with business there.
Yeah, let me take it from the macro, Israel as a whole, to the micro, the region that I visited. On the whole, October 7th, Israel was forced into war. They had to call up about 250,000 soldiers from reserves. That has a huge impact on the economy. It's a big number, but these are people who operate businesses. They work for businesses from all over the country. And all of a sudden, for months at a time, they're no longer operating those businesses. So that's a huge impact. Two, tourists. Tourism basically stopped. The only airline for a while flying into Israel was El Al. And the American Airlines only recently started flying to Israel again, and on a very limited basis. So the number of tourists has declined precipitously. Looking at our region, the Western Galilee, the region that we focus on is the city of Akko. It's about 50,000 people, and a regional council called Mate Asher. It's another 30,000 people made up of a couple dozen communities, mostly...
Kind of like a county?
Kind of like a county, yeah, okay. Exactly. And like I said, they're on the northern border. Around 2 miles in from the border, everything from the border or 2 miles out has been evacuated for 5 months. Okay, these are communities, about 10,000 people plus in our region, but Israel's north in full.
Where are they going?
100,000 people have been evacuated to communities all over Israel. There's one kibbutz in our region that had a couple hundred people evacuated into seven different hotels across the region. So these are people who are neighbors, who live together, who rely on each other, and they're torn apart. Okay, they're no longer able to work at their jobs. The schools are closed down, and the kids have to go to schools in other places. And sometimes the school itself is split into two. So half the day in the morning it's the students who are normally there, and half the day it's all the students who had to be brought in, and they're getting not the full day's worth of education. The domestic life of these families is being tested and torn apart, and that also has real economic impact. The city of Akko, like I said, 50,000 people. It's a beautiful ancient city
on the
port. Yeah, right on the sea. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site that relies completely on tourism, both foreign and domestic. Gone. Businesses are closing up shop because there aren't people to support the hotels, the restaurants. And it's importantly what's known in Israel as a mixed city. And that is, maybe it's a terrible word for it, but really a bastion of coexistence between Jewish Israelis and Arab Israelis who attend the same schools, frequent the same businesses, live in the same community. And to see this negative impact of the war on Israel as a whole, not just its Jewish residents, it's heartbreaking.
And when we talk about agriculture, and we're based, of course, in Des Moines, Iowa, an agricultural center for the United States, when we talk about agriculture in Israel, it's very diversified and pretty modern, as a matter of fact, which is...
Israel is where drip irrigation was invented, out of necessity.
Yes.
You know, the water needs in Israel are greater than nature can provide, and so now there's a ton of desalination plants along the coast that are providing more water than they even need. The North is the agricultural heartland, but there's also a lot of agriculture going on in the South.
Exactly, yes.
In the desert.
Yeah, and that's remarkable to see when you go there, and I've been a couple of times, as a matter of fact, when you go there and you actually see a desert blooming in front of your eyes, where it's just remarkable.
It's remarkable, and what happened on October 7th is terrifying. Hamas, this was not just like a random let's cross the border and see what we can do. This was a planned out attack, and part of that plan was to destroy the agriculture of that region, burn the fields, burn the implements. And that's one of the things that we've been raising money for, actually, recently. The Jewish Federations of North America as a whole has raised nearly $800 million in the last 5 months and has allocated close to half of that already. The rest, they're focusing on longer-term needs. But one of the recent allocations has been made to an organization called Regrow Israel. So like I said, Hamas targeted these farms on October 7th and burned equipment to the ground. The tractors, 100 tractors that are needed immediately for the spring planting season. Insurance is only covering half because it's on a depreciated scale. And trying to acquire, those of your listeners who know anything about ag, it's not easy to just go off into the market and within weeks get 100 tractors delivered. Import-export issues, it has to be new equipment because sometimes old equipment can't be brought in for lots of reasons. And so the Federation system is helping provide the funds to make this happen. And that's just a short-term need, 100 tractors.
Jared Bernstein is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He is the executive director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Des Moines, and we're talking about the business impact on Israel over the past 5 months. One of the things that goes on in an agricultural community are workers for that agricultural community. You mentioned to me off mic that those individuals who pick the crops and do the work are gone.
Just like in America and many other countries, there are quite a few agricultural workers who are foreign laborers. And Israel has relied on foreign laborers for its ag production for some time. And they come from countries like Thailand and India. And they send back money home. And it's a great relationship. But unfortunately, the situation all over Israel is such that their countries told them, hey, Israel's not so safe for you right now. Come back home. Mm. They're actually evacuated by some of these nations. And now fields are left unpicked. And so there's this number of volunteers have flown over to pick. My group helped in the tomato greenhouses. I know someone else who recently helped in the orange groves. But that's a drop in the bucket, you know, having volunteers do that work. Domestically, I've heard of quite a few companies in Israel that are giving time off to their workers to go help pick crops. Incredible dedication by these companies to help out the national economy in this way. And in fact, an app was created where farmers could say, I need 10 people to help me harvest tomatoes on this day at this time. And people can sign up within the app. So it's very organized.
This is kind of a remarkable story, Jared. I mean, I don't know of any nation, I don't know of any conflict where people actually go to the war zone rather than fleeing the war zone. And we're talking about foreign workers leaving, but so many people of all different stripes have flown to Israel to be assistive. I know many evangelical Christians have gone over there to be assistive.
Absolutely.
Taylor Swift's bodyguard, for crying out loud, is in the IDF right now. And it's remarkable how that country has grown in numbers just by people saying, I'm going to sign up and go. That doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. So my flight was out of JFK in New York to Israel on El Al. It was the only flight that I could get. And there was a big group of evangelicals on the trip on their own mission. They, in fact, had been on the tarmac on October 7th, the morning of October 7th, to go to Israel when all of a sudden the flight was canceled because of what was going on. And this was their first opportunity to go back. So it was very interesting connecting with them and learning about what they were, how their itinerary changed because of what happened.
You know, I often tell the story about my first trip to Israel years ago when the pilot said, if you'll look out of the left windows, you're going to see the coast of Israel. And the plane erupted into not only applause, but also the singing of the national anthem, Hatikva, as we were landing. I've never experienced anything like that before.
Yeah. And so I would add to that, this time, that happened. You know, there's always the applause when you land. It's amazing. And the pilot got on in Hebrew and English and expressed hope that the hostages would be released immediately and that peace would come.
So as we talk about the economics of Israel, the economics in Israel, Jared, are widely varied. I mean, it's a technological masterpiece. I mean, what happens, what we use all over the United States, much of that has come from Israel, yes?
To the point that all the major technology companies that you've heard of, whether it be Microsoft, Facebook, Intel, have huge facilities in Israel because they know that's where the talent is.
Yeah, and you know, I when people talk about divesting of Israeli products, I sometimes have to remind them that, okay, you're going to have to put your smartphone away. You're going to have to put your computer away.
You're going to have to go move into a cave, right?
Because all of this technology comes from Israel, and it's fascinating. Coming back to the economics in Israel right now and with regard to the war, not only have there been reserves called up to duty, that they have had to leave their businesses, what takes the place of all of that economic activity while so many people are absent?
It's a vacuum. I mean, that's why you see businesses closing down. People's mental health is at stake. And the long-term consequences of this are many. It's not just, violence ceases one day, which God willing it will soon, and then it's over and people are back to normal. Absolutely, that's not going to be the case. So I imagine there's going to be business consequences of that as well. Let me tell you one story from my experience there. We had home hospitality one evening for dinner, and I was at someone's house who I actually know because he came out for a conference for the partnership last summer. Wonderful, wonderful family. Golan Rosenberg is his name, and he works for the municipality helping with cultural and sports activities for the residents. He lives on a small kibbutz in the region. Suddenly, middle of dinner, people's phones are going off with the Red Alert app, which means there's a missile incoming or rocket incoming. And 10 seconds later, we hear a giant boom. And Golan says, don't worry. That boom was our response. Turns out, he got texted a few minutes later, a rocket hit 6 miles down the road. Okay, 6 miles, you think about it, that's the distance between downtown Des Moines and Valley West Mall. Okay? And the response from Israel, which happened to be down the street from where I was having dinner, took place immediately, and right to that they can track where the rockets are coming from and attack exactly where they're coming from. And so that is like the closest that I got to the war. But he was telling me, he and his wife were telling me, he has three children. All three were called into reserves. He was as well. Okay, so on October 8th, he reports to duty. This man is in his late 40s. Okay, and he's being called into reserve duty, and for 3 months, he's serving in the army, taken away from his, from his work, and this story is repeated over
and over. And he's in his 40s, But I have seen individuals in their 70s who have been called up to do duty with the IDF.
On a volunteer basis, yes.
Right, yeah.
It's incredible.
It is
right?
Incredible.
They're not the ones on the front lines, but there's plenty of support needs that are existing.
Okay, I'm going to dive into something, Jared, that just needs to be talked about. Yeah. What's the answer? What, you know, we all decry the loss of human life.
Yeah.
We all decry the situation that hostages are taken, civilians. We decry the murderous acts of Hamas during the attack on the 7th day of October. And we also mourn the loss of life in Gaza. I know this is way above your pay grade, man, but I suspect that you deal with this almost on a daily basis with constituents who happen to be Jewish in the greater Des Moines metro. What are you hearing?
Well, the most important thing is you can't move forward until the hostages are released. You can't have a ceasefire until the hostages are released. That is the number one focus, and it needs to be. Number two, Hamas cannot exist. When the day after, Hamas cannot exist. They said repeatedly that they will do October 7th. Yeah, number one, read the charter, right? That says, you know, kill the Jew, essentially. Not just essentially, directly. But two, they keep saying, we will do October 7th again and again and again. There's no negotiation with that. What are you going to negotiate? Okay, give us the hostages back and you only do two more October 7ths? There's no negotiation with that. They cannot be in existence. And the other side of it, the so-called moderate side, the Palestinian Authority, which controls the West Bank, they don't like Hamas either, but guess what? They're incredibly corrupt. So there's not a good immediate answer. The immediate answer is Israel needs to secure its own people. And then we can discuss peace.
And I think people forget about 2005, the year that Israel left Gaza. Do you remember that?
That is true. And one of the incredible stories coming out of that was it's very difficult for those who were evacuated from Gaza, whether you believe they should have been there in the first place or not. They had built up businesses there.
Huge infrastructure.
Huge infrastructure on the ag side, too, growing tomatoes, growing cucumbers. And they left that infrastructure for Gazans to take over and build something for themselves. The day after, they were burned down. And guess what they did with all the pipes? They created implements for rockets.
It's a fascinating story. And unfortunately, so many times it gets lost in history because so many people think that Israel started to exist just 75 years ago when it's been actually thousands of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jared Bernstein has been our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Jared, I want to thank you for taking so much time to visit about this. This is such a huge, huge story. And I hope to have you back so we can do another follow-up on this because I think that this is not only a business story, but it impacts so much of
Absolutely.
What's going on here in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
That, once again, is Jared Bernstein. Jared is the executive director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Des Moines. And yes, we will have a link to their website on the radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chaff Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Jared Bernstein, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe. Be well. Be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.